Hi, and thanks for checking out Drinking the Kool-Aid. I'm Cassidy.
And I'm Amanda. And this is a podcast dedicated to the mysterious.
Are you into conspiracy theories?
True crime?
Aliens?
The paranormal?
If so, you might be interested in our podcast, Drinking the Kool-Aid.
Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Just remember to keep your front door locked,
your mind open,
and keep drinking the Kool-Aid.
Welcome to A Killer Podcast. My name's Freya Millard.
And I'm Amy Woodcock, and we're your hosts.
It's episode two. Do you know what that means? It's Amy's time to shine.
It's my turn.
We're excited. What have you got for us, Amy?
Well, my story is the story of William Walker. Have you ever heard of
him? No.
No.
No. No, I haven't.
No. No, I hadn't either before I researched into our murder for money case.
Yes, this episode is all about murder of money. Just murder of money?
Murder of money.
Not the money. Break the patriarchy.
But yeah, I thought, and I when I read up on this one, I just thought it's got such a good twist. It's quite funny. Well, no, yeah, we'll get into it.
Despite the murder,
you'll
funny.
Understand there's a bit of the case which will bring you a bit of joy.
I'm excited for this. Okay.
So, shall I just get started?
Yeah, why not? Let's get into it. Okay. Who wants all that chit-chat?
Exactly. We want to know about the murder. So, this case takes place in 2013, but before we get into the actual story, I'm going to introduce William Walker. So, in 1992, he married his high school sweetheart, Rita, and they had two children. There was a daughter, Melody, and a son, Christopher. But unfortunately, in 2002, they separated due to growing apart, and they got divorced in 2004.
Sad times.
Yeah.
Always the way.
At least it was just growing apart, you know, it could be worse.
It's true, that seems very amicable.
Yeah. William was a well-respected member of the community. He was a firefighter and he also trained civilians on life-saving techniques, which is pretty cool. Aww. So the following year after his divorce, so 2005, William meets 34-year-old Yuloma Curry. She's a single mum of two kids, Macklin and Jackie, and she's a home healthcare nurse. And they started dating. You know, firefighter and a nurse, that's quite cute, isn't
it? That is really sweet. That's very, sweet. Like, picturesque, isn't it?
Yeah.
Put it in the storybook, she would.
So everyone saw them to be a very happy and loving couple, and Yuloma soon moved into Will's house along with her kids. So he was like, yeah, come on in, bring the kids.
I'm your new daddy.
So moving on to 2013, when this case occurs, they have been together for 8 years. So it's been a long-term relationship. And around this time, Yuloma tells William that she's been diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer. Aww. And she couldn't afford the treatments because, you know, America. As I said before, William was known to be a loving and caring person. And this was shown by his response to Yuloma's announcement. He asked her to marry him so that she could get the health insurance benefits from his job.
So
that
really
she could afford to stay alive, basically.
Wow, that is such a fucked up system. Yeah,
it really
right?
is.
Can you imagine actually having to pay to just live? I get Breaking Bad when I hear a case like this.
Yeah.
I get why he did that.
It's one or the other, really.
Honestly, I can't believe you can put a price on living.
Yeah, it's mad. And so, as you can imagine, she accepted this offer. So not long after, the two got married in a private ceremony in Cleveland. So this now makes Yuloma Mrs. Yuloma Curry Walker. And they plan to move into a nice house in the suburbs. Your classic American dream. I wonder if it had a white picket fence. That's what I'm thinking.
It probably did, didn't it?
Yeah.
The nurse and the firefighter.
In their lovely suburban house.
And now they're being talked about on a murder podcast.
So it's not going to end well.
Definitely not.
So here we have set up a nice happily married couple. Well, dot, dot, dot.
I was waiting for the. It was like the whole time you were setting that up, I was like, when is the shoe gonna drop, baby?
So 4 months into the marriage, so we're on November 3rd, 2013. At around 8:30 p.m, Yuloma had sent William out to get McDonald's. Nice.
Fair.
And once he returned, he was shot 4 times in his driveway as he tried to unlock the side door. 911 received a frantic call from Yuloma reporting that he had been shot. He was still alive when the first responders arrived, including a lot of people that he knew from work.
Obviously, being
a firefighter, he knew a lot of like the emergency services. And he was trying to talk to them on the driveway, and he mentioned someone being in the backyard. He was taken to hospital where he underwent surgery, but unfortunately he died.
Wow. That must be so hard if you actually work in an emergency service job and you get called to the house of someone you know.
And it's someone you know, yeah.
So much respect.
Got to make it so much harder.
Yeah. But you've got to do your job, haven't you? And
yeah.
Like, you're trained for situations like that, but you're trained for it on strangers.
Strangers, yeah. So originally the motive was believed to be robbery, as his pockets were pulled out and his wallets were missing. But 4 9mm shell casings were found in the driveway, and they think that this showed intent to kill. Because why would you shoot so many times?
Well, yeah, I was thinking that.
If it was just a robbery gone wrong.
And also, for a wallet? Like,
yeah, exactly.
How much could be in that, really?
To warrant shooting someone 4 times.
Yeah, and if it's a random burglary, then you're just taking a chance on this random guy having enough money in his wallet.
Yeah, exactly.
Warrant you getting potentially charged with murder.
Yeah, so they felt like it didn't seem like a robbery. They thought it was too precise and personal.
Yeah.
The fact that there was multiple bullets. So the first person of interest for the police was a guy named Rex Coleman. He had a record of theft and drug possession, and he lived right next door. And he was also known for using a gun during robberies. So they were like, you know what? Yeah. This sounds like a good contender.
Good MO.
And when they actually went to his house, he had vanished.
Mm.
So a hunt began.
Mm, that is suspicious.
It is, isn't it? During this time, many tips were sent in to the police. During these calls, Rex's name did come up a lot, along with the name Chad. But no one could give a second name. So they were like, who's Chad?
Who's Chad?
Who's Chad?
I love that. Never trust a Chad.
Never trust a Chad.
You learn that in day one of watching American programs.
Exactly.
Chad's trash.
Chad's trash. Chad is trash. Sorry to all the Chads out there that we've just offended.
I've never met a Chad in the UK. It's 100% an American douchebag.
But you said
name.
We've got mostly Chads. American listeners.
No Chads, though.
I don't think there's any Chads anymore, anyway.
But they turned off now, didn't they? We did have a Chad listener, but he won't be coming back.
You know what? I'm done with this. I'm done with this shit.
You know what, Chad? Be like a Karen, except that your name's been co-opted for a different cause.
You are the male Karen. Okay, so one of the tip phone calls they received was from a guy called Johnny Dent. He has a small office in the same building where Will had his training office, and he was saying that he had ran into Will the day before the shooting. Will had told Johnny that he was clearing out his office as his family was moving, so Johnny offered to help him with sorting his things out and putting them in boxes and stuff.
What a nice guy.
During this time, apparently Will kept getting interrupted by secretive, tense phone calls. With each phone call, Will grew angrier. So Johnny was a bit like, what's going on here? And apparently when the calls stopped, his mood returned to normal. This led police to believe there was something more going on. So they spoke to some of Will's colleagues who said they knew someone was giving him a hard time. They had seen Will having angry discussions with people on the phone, which they thought might be about finance.
Ah.
So they're starting to think maybe there's some money issues involved in
this. It's always about the money. Always.
Well, murder for money.
I was going to say.
So finally the police get round to interviewing Uloma. She said she saw a black male at the end of the driveway watching while she was trying to help Will, but didn't see where he disappeared to. Uloma said Will had fought with some of Rex's associates, and soon after he started taking his dog and his gun on walks with him as, like, protection.
Yeah.
So that kind of also backed up the idea of maybe it was something to do with Rex. But when they asked her about a Chad...
that pesky little Chad!
She reveals that her daughter Jackie's boyfriend's name was Chad.
Mm.
His name was Chad Padgett. She said she didn't think he had anything to do with it.
Mm. Interesting. Mm. How old is her daughter and the boyfriend? Teenager.
Yeah, teenage.
Oh. Chads don't actually grow older than teenage years as well.
Stuck in that mentality forever.
If you're named Chad, you don't age past 18. So a phenomenon.
Phenomenal?
Phenomenon.
Well, finally, Rex is found, as he was arrested on unrelated charges. So they were like, oh, we found him. But he proved to have an alibi. He gave his DNA and fingerprints, and everything lined up. So he was actually at a pizza restaurant at the time with his girlfriend.
Hey, Prince Andrew.
I literally was thinking the same thing. Like, I wonder if he can sweat. But, like, they had evidence that he was there, and his DNA wasn't found on the scene, or the bullets, because they found a partial fingerprint on one of the casings, and
It
didn't match or anything, so they couldn't link him to it. So they were like, oh, shit, we've come to a bit of a dead end. So they kind of turned back to the Chad thing. They were like, right, well, what else have we got, Chad? So the police interviewed Uloma's daughter, Jackie. She was said to be very cagey to the police and not very willing to give information, but she did say that Will and Chad got along and liked each other. But this was found to be contradicting to others, such as Will's colleague and his ex-wife, as they said that he didn't get along with him and he didn't want him around.
Didn't like him for his stepdaughter.
Yeah. So it was like, wonder why she's saying something different to them.
Fishy.
And Jackie was saying that she and Chad were at Chad's mother's house the night of the murder, but she didn't know his address. So she couldn't tell them the address. So they were a bit like, right.
You've been there.
Been there. You were there the night of the murder.
Do you think she genuinely didn't know, or she was just trying to delay them going to visit Chad?
Maybe. I mean, I forget your address all the time, to be fair.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So maybe. But it's still a bit of a like, okay.
But you probably like, if you got it up on Google or something, you'd be like, oh yeah, go around this turning, here you go.
Yeah, and you find it. Yeah. And it was in the same town. So yeah. I think you'd know. Right, so let's get into some of the evidence the police have discovered. So I was saying that we found prints on the shell casings, but it didn't match anyone in the system at that point, so they couldn't really get anything from it. A few months after the shooting, the police finally got phone records for the people they'd interviewed, so like Jackie, Uloma and Chad. With this, they used tracking of the locations by cell towers.
Ooh.
From this, they watched how Chad moved along right into the road of Will's house during the time of the shooting.
Oh, Chad.
Contradicting his and Jackie's statements that they had both been at his mum's at the time of the shooting. So that kind of puts a bit of a shitter in Chad's alibi a little bit.
Never take your phone on your murder.
Honestly, never. I think people would learn by now. From this, obviously, Chad was taken into custody, as we can imagine.
Mm.
This causes Chad to open up to the police, and a conspiracy to kill Will was revealed. Take a moment. Guys, tense. Take a moment.
Take a drink. Take a moment.
Let's take a sip. Delicious.
Fill us in.
You ready for the conspiracy?
What is this conspiracy?
So, Chad told police that he didn't kill Will. The whole thing had been arranged by Uloma, who had asked Chad to kill Will. Apparently, Uloma had approached him a few weeks before the shooting with a sob story, claiming that she was abused and needed help getting out of the situation. She offered him payment of £10,000 for him to kill Will. Chad said he couldn't do it himself, but he might know someone who will. You know, just your standard friends.
That's handy, Chad. Thank you.
Chad said Uloma gave him a few $100s to buy a gun and as down payment for the murder. Bit of a deposit, you know.
Wow.
He sought help from his cousin Christopher Heen for both the gun and the contacts for someone to do the killing. From him he got the contact of a Ryan Doughty. Ryan accepts the task. You ready for this?
Oh no.
For a payment of a few $100s and some weed. Man knows what he likes.
Ryan's your go-to guy for everything by the sounds of it. Okay, do it for a few hundred, but I need you to throw something else in.
Just a bit of weed. And now I'm in.
Sold. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You can tell they're teenagers.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So from his arrest, from Chad's arrest, from his confession, his DNA and fingerprints taken, they were able to connect Chad to the shell casings at the scene because it was his fingerprint.
So he was the shooter then?
No, he had the gun originally, didn't he?
So he gave that to his
friend. But it just links him to the gun, which then links like the story.
Okay.
So word gets out about Chad's confession. His cousin Chris, the shooter Ryan, and Uloma's daughter Jackie turned themselves in. They all admitted to their parts of the murder, just as Chad had said.
I can't believe four people would be willing to just kill a stranger for barely any money.
Well, you think about it, the daughter and his cousin didn't even really get anything out of it. They were just knew about it.
Yeah. Wow.
Crazy, isn't it?
People are mean.
Yeah. So investigators started to look into the motive behind the murder, as they didn't believe it to be that Will was abusing Uloma, as there was no evidence pointing towards this reasoning. So investigators obviously looked into the potential of a financial issue as motive, as they believed there was money issues for Will with his heated phone calls. They did find out that some of these phone calls were about a credit card that had been put under Will's name that he didn't know about.
Oh, Uloma, you sneaky dog.
A financial motive was further agreed when Chad told investigators Uloma said that she would get the insurance money if Will dies, and that's how she was going to like pay them off the rest of the money for killing him.
Wow.
Yeah.
I do find it so, what's it called when you're like, can't think of the word, but like the fact that your life insurance money will have been used to kill you
yeah
is like such a
is that, say like it's like ironic
yeah that's it yeah. ironic it's so such ironic. An ironic
yeah
thing.
Your money was used to pay off your killer.
Life insurance was actually the motive to kill you.
Yeah.
Mental.
So obviously they brought Uloma back in to get interviewed again.
Find the
and
truth
she
out.
Was confronted with the evidence and the confessions. Well, she was then all like, yeah, I need an attorney, thanks. And just kind of like saying like, yeah, they got me, I think.
Damn, you got me good.
Oh, shit.
Four people that can corroborate everything that I said?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you know what? I might have an attorney now. But the police already had enough probable cause to place her under arrest for aggravated murder. Soon, more lies were uncovered when it was discovered that she never had cancer. She'd never been through chemo or taken any medication. So it's believed that she only told him this so they would marry quickly under the pretense of needing his insurance for her health.
Oh my God. So she'd been planning that last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
That whole time. She was just like, oh yes.
How did she convince everyone that she'd been getting cancer treatment?
I suppose you wouldn't really question it, would you?
I would if I was in America, because I'd be like, I need those receipts. I am spending a lot of money.
But when you've been with someone for 8 years, so like you'd think you'd yeah. could believe them.
I'm coming up 5 years and I still would ask for receipts.
Poor guy.
Prove how much I gotta pay for you.
But yeah, so it turns out that she wanted to get married quick for his life insurance policy. But this is the funny twist that I was talking about earlier, which I love it. It just brings a sense of like, yes.
Yes.
Yes. And that is that the insurance policy wasn't even in her name.
What?
So she wasn't gonna get any of the money.
Wait, no. So, oh, that guy died. Oh, but, I mean, money. Why is that the sad part? I don't know, but like...
like, she did all that to get his insurance money, and then it wasn't even given to her.
Oh, my God.
She just assumed.
So who was going to get it?
So it was still in his first wife, Rita's name. So his ex-wife actually got the money. The reason why it was still his ex-wife was because that he wanted any money to go to the care of his children in the case of his death, which I think that's a smart move.
Well, considering smart who move. He married the second time, that's probably right.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. So I just thought that was like a good thing. Like, yes, I'm glad she didn't.
But she never even checked. You'd think.
Yeah.
Wow.
People just assume, don't they?
They do.
Yeah.
Mental.
Her trial began on June 21st, 2017, and then on July 7th, the jury deliberates less than 2 hours before finding her guilty of aggravated murder and conspiracy, and she got life with no possibility of parole. And that is the story of Uloma Curry Walker.
What happened to those that committed conspiracy to...
Chad pled guilty to involuntary manslaughter with conspiracy and was sentenced to 28 years.
Ooh.
Ryan, the shooter, pled guilty to aggravated murder and was sentenced to 23 years to life. And then Christopher, the cousin, pled to aggravated murder and conspiracy and was sentenced to 18 years. Doesn't say anything about her daughter.
Wow, that was a very crazy story.
Yeah.
And that poor guy, Will, why did... she didn't check. I mean, not that that would justify it, but...
No, but...
really a loss of a life for no reason at all.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
This is why, people, you've got to be careful as to who you marry.
Keep an eye out on who you're talking to.
Second rule of this season. First rule is be worth nothing. Second rule is marry no one. Follow those rules and you will be safe. And that's all we've got for you. That's the wise advice we can give you today.
Exactly.
Okay, so it's now our burning questions time. What's that all about, Amy?
So we ask each other one question each. So I'll ask Freya a question based around social sciences, and she'll ask me a question based around forensic science. This is just purely based on our educational background and what we find interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of like a little learning opportunity for us where we get to dive into a topic that we're obviously very passionate and interested in. And I always find that I learn something new. I don't know about you.
Yeah, definitely.
So hopefully you guys will gain something from this section too.
So I'm going to ask Freya a question first. How can someone go from being a loving partner for 8 years to conspiring to murder?
Yeah, so the idea of a partner just kind of snapping one day and killing you, I bet is probably everyone's worst nightmare, especially if you're a true crime fan. I think we all just get paranoid about that. As we know, usually the circumstances of a murder happening during an intimate relationship is predated by a history of domestic violence. In essence, what normally happens in a relationship that ends with murder is an escalation of violence over a period of time. So it's just like any other crime. A domestic abuse offender will get more confident with how they commit the crime, and it becomes more frequent and often more violent. Which is why if you're experiencing any form of domestic abuse, such as, but not limited to, gaslighting, physical or sexual abuse, or if you're scared at all, then now is always the time to get yourself out of that situation and to somewhere safer. I know it's far easier said than done, but you're not alone, and in the UK, the charity Refugee runs a domestic abuse helpline, which is free to phone. It's open 24 hours a day, and the number is 0808 2000 247. That's 0808-200-247. But yes, in terms of murders that happen in a non-violent relationship, it isn't as random and unusual as you might think. There are actually some common motives that have been found as the reason why partners kill. A 2017 Australian study into the motives of homicide by Belinda Parker found that the most common reason for intimate partner homicide. That was a very weird way
homicide.
To
homicide.
I've never said it like that before, but I probably will again. homicide was fiercely jealousy at 40%, followed by gain at 23%, and then love at 17%.
When you love someone too much.
It does sound like a really weird motive to kill someone because you love them, but it does happen. I think usually the situation is maybe they are like terminally ill, so it's like an assisted suicide situation. Yeah.
That makes more sense than what I was thinking.
What were you thinking?
Like, just maybe they squeezed them too hard because they love them so much.
Just so much
like, oh my god, I love you so much, I'm going to squeeze you, and then their head pops open or something. That's what I was picturing in my head.
Wow, baby, that was graphic. Yeah, no, that didn't come up in the survey.
Oh, damn it. Okay.
Not the type of love you were thinking.
We should all be very worried for my partner.
Yeah. In terms of gain, that's like obviously the motive in this case. The murderer is out to acquire some personal or financial benefits. Simply put, they kill their partner because they have something the murderer wants, such as money or property. And at that point in their relationship, for whatever reason, they have decided that their partner is worth more to them dead than alive.
That's just nasty. It is nasty.
I'm not advocating. Interestingly, the study found that mainly females committed these gain-motivated intimate partner murders, either because they want an insurance payout and the share of assets, or because they fear to lose out in their husband's will following the impending divorce.
So, they want their money!
This motive kind of goes against what we usually expect with women killing their husbands. I know we usually associate it with domestic abuse situations where the murders are considered reactionary or self-defense, and obviously that is the most common one, but in this situation, it's usually because they're worried that the money and the life they've built is about to be taken from them. But mostly in the
desperate
money.
Desperate times.
Instead, a money-motivated murder from a wife to a husband perspective could highlight the fact that women tend to have less financial security in their relationships, perhaps because they are the main caregiver for the children, so they don't work, or they do work, but it's a lower-paid job, and their husbands then have had the chance to go into higher-paid roles while their wife is at home looking after the children, and they feel like they are owed part of that because they've contributed to the family life so that they can pursue more financial gains. That's why a divorce can be a pressure point that motivates them to kill, because they know they will lose all financial security for now and in the future. And so this results in them believing that murder is the only way to have a lifestyle that they are suited to.
Yeah.
This makes me think of the Betty Brockovich story. Did you watch that on Netflix?
I don't think I've ever heard of it.
Oh my god. Did you watch Dirty John the first season?
No.
Where have you been? I just didn't watch it. Oh, you should definitely watch the Betty Brockovich story. It's like the season two of Dirty John. And
okay.
It talk about Betty Brockovich.
Surprise, surprise.
In case you didn't get that. And it's about a woman who, I think, was it the 70s or the 80s? But basically she killed her husband. Spoilers.
I was going to say.
Sorry,
spoiler
Amy.
Alert.
She killed her husband and his mistress. His new wife.
Oh.
But was mistress
at
the beginning. And it sort of pulls apart how she was kind of driven to the murder and what that motive would look like. Obviously, there was a lot of other factors to that case as well. It's not just driven by that. But she felt that she was entitled to his money because his law practice that took off was on the backbone of her raising the kids.
Damn straight.
And like, it raised a lot of questions at the time when the murder happened. It became very notorious in America because it kind of raised that point of like, well, what are women entitled to if they're not allowed to go out and work, or if they do try to go out and work and they can't get as much, and their sacrifice in the house is why their husbands are able to climb the ladders. If their husband then wants to divorce them, what is the actual fair entitlement?
It's a fair point.
It's a debatable case. I think it's quite an interesting issue because, I don't know, would you say it should be 50-50? Because a lot of people would say the man makes the money, so it's his money. But how did he get to make that money if the woman wasn't there raising the kids and keeping them
home? Yeah, exactly. I think, it should be split.
Nowadays, you can't afford to stay home. But like,
that's true.
Nowadays, both of you have to go out and work because shit is expensive as hell. But back in the day when they were enforcing those stereotypes, I feel like when society was kind of making it the norm to do that, I feel like there should have been more equality at the point.
Yeah.
Very interesting. But of course, the other type and most obvious motive for a finance-based murder is greed. That's what money's all about.
They just want the money.
Just like any type of partnership, whether it's business or romantic, money and greed can psychologically change someone to the point that they do something so inhumane like committing a murder.
Mm.
Psychology Today reports that greed actually works a lot like an addiction in our brain. In the article I read by Dr. Leon Seltzer, he said, chasing every financial opportunity to the detriment of virtually everything else in their life has become their be-all and end-all. The end for them is simply the high or dopamine release they receive each time they do a deal, turn a profit, or make a killing. No pun intended.
Ooh.
So if you've got a taste for money or want more of it,
do anything for it.
Murder's not off the table.
Exactly. Wow, that was very interesting.
Hope you learned something. So, Amy, my question for you. How does mobile tracking location work?
So the process used is called cell site analysis. So whenever you make a call or text or connect to your data, this information will be recorded and can be used to determine an area in which the phone has been used. So your historic general location can be determined by this information, and this can then be used as evidence for alibis, either by providing evidence of the phone being in that suspected area or eliminating the chance of that phone being in that area. So all the recorded data will be stored by your specific mobile network. This is primarily for billing purposes and includes the date, time, duration and numbers involved. These records are called your cell data records. Other information you can also obtain from these records is the IMEI number, which is a unique serial number embedded in your particular mobile. And the cell ID, which is the identification of the cell tower used to carry the calls.
Wow, I didn't know they could access so much information. Like
Everything
is on there.
Yeah.
Man.
They're spying on you guys. So your cell site data can be requested to give the cell ID used. This will give the relevant cell site and sector that's used. So the cell site is like the towers and the masts you see. Mm-hmm. These are called macro cells. They provide service for as little as a few hundred meters in urban areas and up to a few kilometers in rural areas. There are also micro cell sites that you won't see. They're in less obvious places. So they'll be in like shopping centers, airports, busy high streets. So they're all around us, really. Mm. And these provide a smaller range of service. Each cell site are split into sectors. There's usually three, each which have its own antenna, and are generally equally spaced at 120 degree intervals to provide service all around that mast or building. Each sector has its own cell identity recorded in the data record, which is then what they obtain.
Okay, so basically at any given point, they can track you
if you have your phone. By your phone, So the data they get provides the name of the site, the grid reference, the postcode, and the direction.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Used. And this has helped to establish your geographical location.
I think postcode alone is pretty solid.
I mean, yeah, it's a pretty good one. So network providers, they will get the cell site used for the start and the end of the call or a text or whatever. So obviously sometimes it will be the same cell site, because if you stay in one place, you continuously use the same one. But if you're moving, you might switch from one to another one, so they can actually watch your movements during these activities.
So if I just put my phone on airplane mode and went to do some suspicious stuff, would they know where I was, or is it...
I think it's literally only when they have a signal is sent out.
So if someone like messages me,
yeah,
so even if I don't want to message anyone because I'm busy doing suspicious stuff,
yeah,
they can tell because you've dropped me a message, and they're like, oh well, she's there.
And also, this is one thing I found, like, you know, maybe you'll turn your phone off, can be like sneaky,
yeah.
But as soon as you turn your phone back on, it will go through a registration process where it performs a network search by sending out a signal. So as soon as you turn your phone on, it's going to be like, oh, I found you. So if you turn it on while you're still at the scene, say,
yeah,
it will pick up the location.
You're like trying to figure out your Google Maps to get home.
Yeah.
Wow. That is kind of like, what's it called, where, like, George Orwell. Society, isn't it, where you're being watched, Big Brother is watching you.
I do think that it is possible that they might be able to continuously tell where you are. From what I've read, it says that your mobile phone is constantly monitoring the network and the strongest cells available, so it's always like pinging where you are to the network to say which one is best for them to use if you make a call or if you do a text.
Yes.
So it's almost like you are being constantly monitored, but I'm not sure if that data is saved or if it's only when you do something.
This reminds me of the whole thing with Alexa. You know what I mean? She's always got to be listening to know when you say the word Alexa, doesn't
she? Yeah, exactly.
But she's always collecting that data. So every noise you make in her proximity is technically being
listened to.
Yeah. So is it similar? It's basically
similar. Yeah, it's always ready to go when you need it to work.
It knows, like, if you drive 5 miles, it knows you're there.
And it knows that now you'll need to use that cell tower rather than a different one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's how it works. They're always watching, guys.
There's no such thing as freedom anymore.
They're looking at me right now through this iPad.
Join
that
cult that I spoke about on the Halloween episode. I'll give you guys some contact. They'll still find you. Throw your phones away.
Yeah, basically, just don't have a mobile phone. I think that's the rules.
But even that, I feel like CCTV.
Yeah.
Alexa.
Just carry an Alexa around in your pocket.
Yeah. I think technology is far more advanced than we think it is.
Yeah, definitely.
I feel like I'm gonna deep dive into some conspiracy, because this is the one thing I actually feel passionately conspiratory about, and that is that the government knows far more than they let us know.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way they're not monitoring us. They have the technology to monitor us.
Yeah, the pigeons.
Yeah, like someone I know, they have like a job where they've got something that you have to be secretive about, so they won't have an Alexa in the house. Because they don't trust that it is 100% like
not tracking.
Yeah. Not like that they think they'd ever give anything away, but it's just like that.
You have to be extra careful.
Yeah. And I was like, well, if you don't want to have one,
then shall I not want one?
What do you know that I don't know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting.
No one's safe. It's not aliens, it's the government.
Unless the government are aliens.
Lizard people.
Lizard people.
When are we going to do a conspiracy season?
I'm up for this.
Me too. Wow, that was a really good episode. I feel like it was justice that she didn't receive a penny.
Yeah, I did appreciate that a lot.
It's like Italian kiss. Kiss. Yeah. Do you have any nice notes you want to end on? We're trying to add a little joy to the end of our podcast so we're not so doom and gloom.
Well, I know you're going to really love what I've been enjoying recently.
Oh god, okay.
And that is the new Twilight book. I say new, it's probably been out for a while now, but the newest of the bunch.
Yeah.
Midnight Sun. I got it as soon as it came out, I have to say.
You were always the biggest Twilight fan, weren't you?
I really was. It was my life, I'm not gonna lie, guys.
You were.
It was great.
Edward Cullen all the way, or were you Jacob?
Oh, Jacob.
I thought you were Jacob, but I had my doubt then. I was like, because I think most people were Edward.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like if I had to pick between the two, I'd probably go for Jacob.
Hands down, Jacob.
Like, he's always warm. Imagine it being really cold and you'd just be like, warmth. And like,
Edward was just creepy. I mean, wait, isn't Midnight Sun written from Edward's?
Yeah, it's basically the first Twilight book, so Twilight, but told from Edward's perspective. And it's very angsty, guys. So angsty.
I feel like it's just like, I watched her here, I watched her there.
Pretty much. For the first like half of the book, it's just like, I'm watching her sleeping again. Ooh, she's tossing and turning. What is she dreaming about?
And we wonder why we have a problem with creeps in our society.
Yeah. I would say that if you aren't an original Twilight fan,
not for you.
I wouldn't read it, because I don't think I'd enjoy it if it wasn't that I had Twilight deep down in my soul.
deep.
It is a little bit cringy, it is.
Yeah.
But I'm enjoying it from like a nostalgia point of view.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's been my thing that I'm enjoying.
I'm happy for you, you know? Happy for you. And I'm sure there's many others that will...
They're all loving it.
Yeah. They've got some hardcore Twilight fans out there, I'm sure.
And I am one of them.
You are definitely one of them. Twilight forever.
Always. Do you have any nice notes to end on? Anything better than Twilight? I don't think
Anything better than Twilight. Wow, what a hard challenge. Where would I begin? Yes. this week I discovered Bailey Sarin. I want to say her name right. Bailey Sarin, I think her name is. She does murder and makeup on YouTube and on Facebook, which is where I watch her.
Ah,
and
yes.
I'm obsessed. I've been like a bit stalkerish, gotta be honest with you. I was like, wow, this is so cool. I've never been one of those people that watch makeup videos.
Yeah.
I don't know. Don't get me wrong. I think it's an art form. I like to see the end results. I think that people can do amazing stuff with it. But the idea of sitting there all day watching people put on their makeup isn't my thing.
Yeah.
But when you add murder into the mix, now it's
That's exciting.
It's soothing. It's so soothing watching someone like put their makeup on, and she does all these really lovely eyeshadow designs, and then she tells like a story, and it's, I was like,
that sounds good. Now I've never actually seen one. I have heard of her before.
Oh, she's good.
But I haven't actually watched it myself, so I'm gonna have to, I think.
You have to, you have to. It's, you know, I like to get ready listening to her. Well, she's getting ready now. I feel like she's gonna be part of my day.
It's beautiful.
It's a beautiful time. So it's every Monday, and I've just bulk watched all the episodes I've probably missed. I think she's been doing this probably for ages, and I'm just so behind.
Just catching up.
We're not very trendy people, are we, Amy? We're
no,
very...
a bit behind.
Yeah. I mean, you're stuck well, in your Twilight phase.
I mean, that is relevant to this day. This day and age.
And I just...
Bring Twilight back.
Yeah. Redo the films.
Oh, God. No. No, let's not do that. Let's keep the originals. Ooh. Can't get any better than the originals.
Can't get any worse. Wow. Okay, well, that's our summary for the episode.
Yeah. Hope you guys enjoyed episode 2 and my story. So you need to come back next week for the third episode, which will be Freya's turn again.
Yay!
For more Murder for Money.
Yes, and in the meantime, if you haven't already, please go give us a follow on our social media accounts. Where are we, Amy?
We're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook.
Yeah.
All of them are... A killer podcast. Like, just search that and you'll find us.
We keep it very simple. And also, if you want to be absolutely lovely and amazing, you could go give us some reviews on Apple Podcasts, because that's the thing that we're supposed to be promoting. So,
oh yeah, I've heard about that. I don't know.
See, I told you, we're not trendsetters. We're very behind.
What is an apple?
Sometimes I do feel like a grandma. I'm like, Amy, have you heard about the Apple Podcast?
Well, you have been mistaken for your older sister's mother, so.
Oh, Amy, you had to bring that up. You had to hit me like that.
Where's your grandma jumper now?
Guys, it was the worst moment of my life. I didn't think I wanted to spill it on this podcast, but I guess now's the time. Before you go, let me leave you with the most harrowing experience I've ever had. It was earlier this year. It was a summer day, late summer, and I was helping my sister at her new house that she just moved into. She was chatting to a neighbour that had passed her by at the top of the drive. I came out of the house, came towards them, and he asked her if I was her mother. I am 24 years old. My sister is 28. And he thought I was old enough to have a 28-year-old. And I was like, well, maybe he thought you were just really young, you know? And then she was like, well, he knew I owned the house. And then I thought, well, fuck. He so he knows that you're old enough to own your own home.
Yeah.
And you still think that I, a 24-year-old, look like your mother.
Yeah, it's not good.
Yes, I've reevaluated everything. My life has changed deeply.
I mean, how old could you be? Like, you'd be in your 40s, 50s.
Exactly. There's no way. And then I said to Mac, my partner, I said, this has gotten me. I am shook.
This has broken her soul.
And he was like, it's a compliment. It means you look really good for your age. And I was like, I'm 23. I'm 24. He was trying to build my spirit up. And yeah. I was like, no, it means I look shit for my age. I was like, that's a compliment if you're 50 and someone says it like, you don't look old enough to have a daughter. Not like you're 24 and you look old enough to have a 28-year-old daughter. So yeah, that broke me.
Great story.
And I'll leave you with that. Until next time, have a killer week.
Bye. You can find a full list of our resources used to create this episode at our website, witworld.co.uk/podcast.
That's witworld.co.uk.